This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
World Wide Wave, it's Joy's international news and current affairs show. We take you around the globe, one country at a time. In the studio with me tonight, hello, Paul.
Hello, Matt.
Welcome, Sarah.
Hello.
G'day, Dean.
G'day, Matt.
And I am indeed Matt. Now, last week, more than 18,000 global leaders, scientists, advocates and frontline health workers gathered in Durban, South Africa for the 21st International AIDS Conference, AIDS 2016. Some topics were new, others have been spoken about before, but for all, the goal remains the same, the end of AIDS by 2030.
Can you cure HIV and AIDS with medicine alone?
And how does gender impact the future goal of ending AIDS?
What is the role of the youth of the world in fighting HIV?
From Durban in South Africa, tonight we hear from Oscar award-winning actress, native South African, all-round amazing person and AIDS activist, Charlize Theron, continuing his mother's work in AIDS, it's Prince Harry, and scientist Christa Lauer.
Here's a taste of what you've got coming up tonight.
HIV is not just transmitted by sex. It's transmitted by sexism, racism, poverty, and homophobia. And if we're going to end AIDS, we have to cure the disease within our own hearts and within our own minds first. And I believe the young people are the ones who can do it. Young people have always been the drivers of social change.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
Well, this week we're starting off in the good old USA. Now, there's been some very good news for male sex workers in Cleveland this week.
In Cleveland?
In Cleveland.
Not much good news for the rest of the world in Cleveland. But
well, no, that is true. But sex workers have told the New York Post that business this past week has never been better. And it's all thanks to the Republican National Convention.
Now, are they the donkeys or the elephants?
Elephants. So, otherwise known as the GOP, the good old party. Now, one escort has reported that he'd seen 10 male clients in the past week. Another sex worker claimed he'd made 5 to 6 times what he would normally earn. On an average week, he's likely to bring in $200 or $300, but since Monday, he said that he'd earned $1,600. Another man said he's been raking in more than $800 a day at a rate of $250 an hour. Who says that the Republicans are not the party of small business?
Who said they're not pro-gay? They're certainly sort of pro-something.
Exactly.
Pro-pro, perhaps.
Now, the workers have advised that many of their new clients are married politicians or delegates who are staying in hotels downtown near the convention. And this influx of same-sex hookups is ironic, considering, as you probably have heard in the media the past week, the Republican Party's official stance on LGBT people. Oh, my goodness. This week, the Republican National Convention passed what many believe to be the most anti-gay platform in GOP history, and that's saying a lot.
They were even talking about endorsing gay conversion therapy. In fact, we had a message on Facebook during the week. Greg says, in regards to gay conversion therapy, will they start this program inside their own ranks?
Well, they also reaffirmed its position that marriage is a union strictly between one man and one woman. Interesting that the Canadian Conservative Party has recently finally decided after 10 years of same-sex marriage in Canada to say, yeah, it's over, but the Republicans are holding firm.
They saw Justin Trudeau and went, nah, we surrender.
That's it.
You see him and anyone would surrender.
Now, they denounced the Obama administration's position on trans bathroom access and said it is, I quote, illegal, dangerous and ignores privacy issues, and also said we salute the several states which have filed suit against it. Now, while gay sex workers are profiting from the Republican National Convention, women have not been quite so lucky. One female sex worker told the New York Post, has business been better for me? Honestly, no.
Is that a comment on how many women turned up to the Congress or We don't know.
Who can? There are many things I could say, but probably they would be potentially offensive.
We will let the audience infer what they'd like from
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
Over to Europe now.
Yes, and in Romania, marriage equality could be off the table. Currently, Romania does not recognise same-sex marriage or civil unions between LGBT couples. Now, the Romanian Orthodox Church has announced its plans to ban same-sex marriage in January.
Which is probably not a huge surprise.
And 85% of Romanians belong to the church.
This has all come out of a citizens' initiative. So this is one of those countries that if you get enough signatures on a petition...
3 million in this case.
Yeah, but they didn't need 3 million. They only needed... 500,000. 500,000, they got 3 million signatures. So quite a big push by the church to get people to sign up. And if they get enough... signatures, which they did, then the parliament has to address or look at this issue.
Well, it sounds like it was difficult to actually avoid them. They had thousands of volunteers out collecting signatures. They were door knocking, they were in public squares or on TV, they're at churches. You turn around a corner, you bump into one, basically. It's not surprising they got 3 million signatures.
Now, the good news for the LGBT community is that these homophobic changes are not a sure thing. A majority vote in Parliament and a national referendum are still needed. So a few steps to go. And we have actually been in contact with one of the key groups in Romania, which will be bringing you an interview with them in the coming weeks.
Now on to Africa, where Tanzanian officials are attempting to ban the import and sale of lube.
Good luck with that.
So this is not to do your car or anything. This is
no. For the fun lube.
Right.
Unless you really like doing up your car, in which case I'm sure they're both fun. So the health minister, Umi Mwalimu, has said the ban was justified because the product encourages homosexuality. And this is an African country, so you won't be gasping and shocked when I tell you that same-sex sexual activity between men can be punished with life imprisonment in Tanzania. Luckily, lesbian sex is currently not mentioned in penal codes, although from personal experience, the people don't look kindly upon lesbians. But police have also been accused of multiple human rights violations against LGBT people in recent years.
I think this is quite interesting, and given our topic tonight, this came out in the very week that Africa was hosting the biggest AIDS conference in the world.
Yeah, it's amazing, because East Africa especially has been a huge amount of really positive impact on the number of people getting HIV. And then there's been a lot of backwards laws against LGBT people.
I love what the minister said in terms of pitting gay people against everyone else. It is true that the government has banned the importation and use of jelly to curb the spread of HIV. They've instructed the stakeholders to remove the products from the market. And she also added that stakeholders who've been buying lubricant to give to the gay community should instead give the money to the ministry so they can spend it on maternity ward beds.
Yeah,
creating a conflict that doesn't exist.
In Tanzania. Across to America, a non-profit organisation, Planned Parenthood, are jumping on the recent Pokemon Go bandwagon and using it to fight the spread of STIs by introducing a brand new creature which looks suspiciously like a Pokemon Go-esque condom.
This year, the Jerusalem Pride attracted 225,000 revelers. They were escorted by 2,000 police officers, given last year's homophobic attack, but that was up from 5,000 the previous year.
And in Denmark, three Ugandan lesbians are to be deported after having their request for asylum denied.
And that's a wrap.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
I am Bisi Alimi from Nigeria. For those who say homosexuality is a Western import to Africa, I am a proof that you can be proudly African and gay and fabulous. And I'm on Worldwide Wave.
Taking you around the globe, one country at a time. This is your Fun Fast Facts.
Now we're looking at AIDS 2016, the World AIDS Conference held last week in Durban, South Africa. And currently there's 37 million people living with HIV. Only 15 million, less than half, have access to treatment. But access to drugs helps South Africa to raise its life expectancy by 10 years.
Yeah, access to treatment is amazing. So there were 2 million new infections in 2014, And despite all our new drugs, still 1.2 million people died.
Now, Australia announced, you probably saw it in the media, there have been a few initiatives, actually, so announcements, which we'll talk about in a bit more detail about the end of AIDS in Australia. But there have been ambitious new programs to trial PrEP, particularly to do with gay men, with the aim of virtually eliminating HIV in the gay community by 2020.
The UN has warned that women, children, transgender people, sex workers and young people in general remain under-prioritised in national policies and remain mostly at risk.
And interestingly, many of the themes at AIDS 2016 were around those exact areas.
In average, there were 29 new infections an hour last year among adolescents in the 15 to 19 age group, and also 75% of all new HIV infections in southern and eastern Africa are in mainly girls between 10 and 19, adolescent girls. And AIDS is still the number two cause of death for those aged 10 to 19 across the world.
And gender's such a big issue in the AIDS conference last week, looking at violence in women and the increased risk of HIV, and some new programs with microfinancing giving women small loans in southern Africa to reduce partner violence and reduce HIV infections.
There still is no vaccine for HIV, which will prevent someone from getting it, and there is no cure yet.
Now, the theme of AIDS 2016 in South Africa last week was Access, Equity, Rights, Now. When you're a member of the royal family, you are guaranteed of attracting attention. And last week in Durban, young Prince Harry followed his mother's footsteps to channel that attention in order to drive change in the area of HIV.
In 2004, Prince Harry visited Lesotho, a landlocked country in Africa, during his gap year. It left an indelible mark on him, resulting in Prince Harry joining with Prince Siso of Lesotho to establish Sentebale, a charity to help the most vulnerable children in Lesotho get the support they need, particularly around HIV and AIDS epidemic. And he spoke of his personal experiences at AIDS 2016 last week.
This stunning country is home to some of the most breathtaking scenery on earth. It is also home to some of the world's most vulnerable young people. On that first visit, and many others over the last 13 years, I have met countless young people who know little of what it means to be a child. When my friend Prince Seso and I founded Sentebale, we saw early on that children living with HIV grapple with severe medical, emotional, and social challenges all at once. Over the last decade, working in Lesotho, I've seen firsthand the amazing progress that has been made in treating the physical and mental effects of HIV. HIV remains the number one cause of death amongst adolescents in sub-Saharan Africa. It is time for us to step up to make sure that no young person feels any shame in asking for an HIV test. In helping young people to fight HIV, we would not just be ending this epidemic. Change the direction of history for an entire generation.
That's Prince Harry speaking about his personal experiences at the World AIDS Conference in Durban, South Africa last week. And coming up, stick around, this is a great, rousing and very inspiring speech from actress and AIDS activist Charlize Theron. You're on Worldwide Wave.
Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Effie from Pewa, Kenya. We are supporting gender and sexual minorities in Africa on the World Wide Web.
Tonight we're talking about AIDS 2016, the conference that's happening in Durban at the moment, and we're going to be hearing next from an amazing speech from Charlize Theron, who is my idol, but also we...
You've been gushing all evening.
Oscar-winning actress, multiple nominee.
She's going pink as we speak.
Yeah, she can ride a horse.
Furiosa in Mad Max, Fury Road.
Yeah, she's marvellous in so many ways.
Charlize!
But also,
tell us about your scrapbook.
No,
go on. Tell the listeners.
Excuse me, this is a serious radio program. Can we bring it level down?
Hey, a scrapbook can be serious.
Yeah, I had a scrapbook of things I liked, and Charlize Theron was quite often in there. And she was just amazing because she's just no bull.
And now you like her even more because she is an activist in the area of HIV.
Yeah, I was going to say actually why part of why I identify with her is that basically I grew up in southern Africa as well at the same time. And my best friend when I was seven was the gardener's son, Hamish. And we went back to England and came back, and Hamish had actually died. And my mum had to explain to me what AIDS was and that he'd got it from his mother when he was born. So Oscar-winning actress Charlize Theron was also born and raised in South Africa, and she grew up in the height of the HIV epidemic and experienced people dying from AIDS. And speaking at the opening of AIDS 2016 in South Africa, she pushed for societal changes to help end AIDS.
It's typical when invited to speak at a conference to begin by saying, I'm honored and I'm grateful to be here. And I am very grateful to be here and to be given this opportunity to speak and to be here with such an esteemed group of people. But if I am being honest with myself and with you, I'm also sad to be here at the 21st International AIDS Conference. This is the second time my country of South Africa has hosted. And that's not an honor. And that's not something that we should be proud of. We shouldn't have had to host this conference again. Please, please, please understand that I don't mean to insult anyone here or belittle the extraordinary work that has been done by this amazing community. Over the years, I have seen the impact of your work firsthand. I have been personally inspired by your commitment to this fight. Countless millions of people would have died without your dedication and your compassion. But I think it is time that we acknowledge that something is terribly wrong. I think it's time we face the truth about the unjust world we live in. The truth is, we have every tool we need to prevent the spread of HIV. Every tool. Condoms, PrEP, PEP, ART, awareness, education. And yet, 2.1 million people, 150 of them children, were infected with HIV last year. In South Africa alone, 180,000 people died of AIDS last year. 2.1 million children and counting have been orphaned by this disease. I could go on for a very, very long time with these statistics we all know so well. But instead, let's ask ourselves, why haven't we beaten this epidemic? Could it be because we don't want to? And by we, I don't mean just the people in this room. I mean humanity. All of us. Because when you ask why, you get the same answers again and again and again. Ending AIDS is too expensive, too daunting, too complicated, too stigmatized, too politicized. And I'm going to stop there because those aren't real answers. They're just excuses. The real reason we haven't beaten this epidemic boils down to one simple fact. We value some lives more than others. We value men more than women. Straight love more than gay love. White skin more than black skin. And adults more than adolescents. I know this, because AIDS does not discriminate on its own. It has no biological preference for black bodies, for women's bodies, for gay bodies, for youth or the poor. It doesn't single out the vulnerable, the oppressed, or the abused. We single out the vulnerable, the oppressed, and the abused. We ignore them, we let them suffer, and then we let them die. My foundation, CTOP, and a number of our colleagues are calling on today's youth to the young people, to be the generation that ends this epidemic, to be Gen End It. I just want to be clear about what the it in that sentence is. It is not just AIDS. It is the culture that condones rape and shames victims into silence. It is the cycle of poverty and violence that traps girls into teen marriages and forces them to sell their bodies to provide for their families. It is the racism that allows the white and the wealthy to exploit the black and the poor and then blame them for their own suffering. It is the homophobia that shames and isolates LGBT youth and keeps them from life-saving healthcare and education. HIV is not just transmitted by sex. It's transmitted by sexism, racism, poverty, and homophobia. And if we're going to end AIDS, we have to cure the disease within our own hearts and within our own minds first. And I believe the young people are the ones who can do it. Young people have always been the drivers of social change. Yes. And this generation holds unique promise. After all, this is the generation of Malia Yousafzai, then Anuyara Khatun. This is the generation that is shattering taboos, redefining old notions of gender, sexuality, and racial justice. Not long ago, right here in South Africa, I watched a young LGBT activist challenge a bishop to accept all people into the church. Her courage and her conviction was so inspiring to me. And I know that her confidence comes from caring adults who create safe spaces to talk about issues without any judgment, who educate and empower young people to take control of their bodies and ownership of their futures. You are the world's leading researchers, the grant makers, medical professionals, and program implementers. The work you do is vital. It has changed the course of this epidemic. But it will not end it, at least not on its own. Yes, we have to all play our part, so we have to work harder and faster and smarter than ever before, but it will not be our generation that will end AIDS. It will be the next generation. I believe the single most important thing each of us can do is to leave here tonight and to connect with a young person. Listen, truly listen to what she has to say. Give her a seat to the table. Let her be part of the conversation. And let's make sure our work reflects her input and her voice. The solution to the epidemic isn't just in our laboratories and in offices or in conferences like this. It is in our communities. And it's in our schools. And it's in our streets. Where one smart choice or a helping hand can mean the difference between life and death. Nelson Mandela said, young people are capable when aroused of bringing down the towers of oppression and raising the banners of freedom. If we support our young people, if we give them the confidence and the space to speak out against bigotry and injustice, if we take the time to listen and empower them, they will end this epidemic. In closing, I really would like to thank you, all of you, for your amazing work and your commitment to this extraordinary movement. This assembly has truly been inspiring, and I'm going to say it again. I am incredibly grateful to be here. But with all due respect, I hope we don't keep meeting like this. Since the first International AIDS Conference in 1985, we have been counting up all the way to 21. Now it's time for us to start counting down. We have set a goal to end AIDS by 2030. And there are four more international AIDS conferences between now and then. They must be our last. Thank you.
That was Charlize Theron speaking at the World AIDS Conference. Very passionately, I should
indeed. Great speech. And very inspiring. A couple of things that really stood out there. We have every tool we need to prevent HIV. So we've got everything, but the pieces just aren't coming together to actually...
It's money, it's willpower as ever. It's not letting anyone fall through the cracks, like she kept saying.
We have PrEP. It doesn't need to be a thing anymore.
Well, it's also 1990. There's this thing, I think it's test, treat, and then that causes prevention. So testing and treating causes prevention. You don't even need PrEP necessarily. And so I think Tanzania's got up to about 86% tested and treated. And if we can get 90% in all of those, we'll pretty much stop transmission.
Which, for Africa in particular, will be leaps and bounds ahead. That other, and this was a big theme right throughout the conference, was around youth and adolescents, also looking at children as well. But the power of youth to make change if they want, and that the current generation is actually not the one that will, if you like, defeat AIDS. It'll be the next generation, so start working with young people. You on board with that one?
Yes and no. Yes, the youth definitely are the way forward. A bit obvious statement, but anyway. But it's, we need to empower them. So the generation now needs to give them the power and give them the knowledge and give them the
trust.
The trust, yeah.
Yeah, it's the trust. Everyone can get knowledge now with the internet, I hope.
But can we trust what's coming out of the internet?
Yeah, true.
And that other line that rung true for me is the solution is in communities, not laboratories.
Social change.
Yeah, really just taking that out of the... and without discredit to the health sector, which is absolutely making change, but being able to make use of the medical gains relies on societal change.
Yeah.
I heard a comment about that certain people don't matter. I think that rung quite true for me, that white skins matter more than black skins.
Men more than women.
Straight love matters more than LGBT love. I mean, you just have to look at the kind of responses that we get across social media and the internet when there's a terrorist attack in a non-white country.
It doesn't get the flag
doesn't,
changing on
no, it
Facebook
doesn't get
or
the,
those sorts of things.
You don't get that momentum,
does it?
The candlelight vigils, you don't get the flag lowerings.
No, I remember when Princess Di died, and she died the same week as Mother Teresa, but I bet no one in the UK realised. I was always really upset by that, as someone who did something pretty good.
We're talking all things AIDS 2016, the World AIDS Conference, last week in South Africa, and you are on the World Wide Wave.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Now, a message in to one of our Facebook stories. Could former PM John Howard be the leading face of the No campaign in marriage equality? Greg says, the face of No, that could actually stick. Thanks, Greg.
Tonight we're talking about AIDS 2016, and next we have scientist Krista Lauer presented new data on the connection between the criminalisation of same-sex acts with HIV and how some countries are misreporting.
Moving on to gay and bisexual men and other men who have sex with men, this is not an HIV prevention map. This is actually a map of sexual orientation laws around the world. So all the countries that still criminalize same-sex acts between consenting adults. And the reason that we're using this map is because data is political. And there was an excellent presentation by Meg Davis and her colleagues from NYU at the MSMGF pre-conference about how the criminalization of same-sex acts between consenting adults actually has a profound effect on public health data and information, specifically on population size estimates of men who have sex with men. This makes sense. If you are in a country that criminalizes who you love, it might be a little bit intimidating to present yourself to health services or to surveys who are trying to get an accurate population size estimation. So we see very low population size estimates among MSM in countries with LGBT criminalization laws. We've kind of always known this anecdotally. This is some of the first research that we've seen to really back this up. The way that it plays out, though, is a number of countries are surprisingly reporting really, really high coverage rates of HIV testing among men who have sex with men. And when the research team dug into this, they found that part of it was the entirely small sample sizes of what they felt was representative of the entire MSM population in a given country. So, for example, Algeria conducted a total of 59 tests, HIV tests among men who have sex with men. 57 of those tests were picked up, so they counted 96.6% HIV testing coverage rate among men who have sex with men. So you can see why this might be a little bit problematic. It's not necessarily adequate. It demonstrates that there's no need to prioritize this kind of work in the country and not to channel funding in that direction either. Community-defined priorities are, of course, the way that we need to move forward. Context matters. If you live in a context where the people that you love and your sexual orientation is criminalized, if you live in a place where sexual orientation is not criminalized, but stigma is incredibly rampant and homophobia is rampant, that affects how well we can do in the global HIV response. You can make a contribution across sectors. Of course, we need tailored services. We need policy advocates. We need lawyers. We need health service professionals. We need community healthcare workers to all align under this shared rubric. And finally, I would say that if there is one thing maybe that we can do to advance all of these priorities is to foster opportunities for key populations to claim the space.
That was scientist Kristen Lauer with just one of the many presentations from AIDS 2016, the World's AIDS Conference in South Africa, Durban, last week.
And Krista actually has written blogs before, and she has said that in Africa and the Caribbean, where a lot of HIV prevention work focuses on heterosexual sex, many men don't believe they can get HIV from having sex with other men. So let alone the fact that they're not being tested or, you know, because of the fear of discrimination. I thought that stat's amazing.
So we still have a long way to go. Now, we did a flag before Australia announced, or our leading scientist, top scientist, announced the end of AIDS in Australia, made the news saying basically that AIDS is no longer a public health issue in Australia. What do we think about that?
I thought it was just shocking when I heard that, because there's so much scope for misinformation.
I think, and certainly there were sites that reported, that did the follow-up, that it's not the end of HIV, but there were sites that didn't. So it certainly worried me that there were a whole lot of people going, oh, well, it's not, no longer a problem. And even just that last speaker there, Krista, saying that, you know, when it ceases to be seen as a problem, well, the funding stops, the issue stops, people stop doing things to progress.
But also, we like to do things that make us feel good. So if all of this work on HIV and AIDS has had an effect and stopped people dying of AIDS, then maybe that will keep people pushing on HIV, so we don't even have to worry about that in the future, about infection. So maybe I think that's probably what they were going for in the good news story side.
And there are still 1,000 new cases of HIV reported in Australia each year. Tonight, we're talking AIDS 2016. You're on World Wide Wave.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
This is Tiseke Kasambala from Human Rights Watch, South Africa office, on the World Wide Wave.
A big thank you to our interviewees tonight, courtesy of AIDS 2016. You can find out more about the conference at aids2016.org.
Messages. We'd like to thank everyone that interacted with us on Facebook. That's William, Lisa, Mark, and many more. That's W3Joy on Facebook, and also the SMS and emails we got today.
And another one just in, one of the representatives at the recent AIDS conference, we're a laughing stock of the conference held one or two weeks ago as a result of the announcement about no more AIDS in Australia. So not well received there.
It's good that if we're the laughing stock, it's good that there was a bit of, you know, levity thanks to the Australians.
not the kind of levity we're after. Our podcasters as well, a heap of podcasts have gone up this week. So Mark and Damien.
Fantastic. And thanks to Gordon, I think, on our front desk tonight.
No, he's not in tonight. Oh, he's at home.
No thank
playing,
you to Gordon.
Playing
no,
the bagpipes and eating haggis.
This has been World Wide Wave, and we'll catch you next week. What's our song?
A
I think it's a bit obvious, really. It's Madonna and Open Your Heart. Yet another strong supporter of HIV.
Catch you next week on World Wide Wave.
Thank you for listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Great shows, great topics, great radio. Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.